He was balancing himself on the dashboard of his car with that resourcefulness of movement that is so peculiarly American, that comes, I suppose, with the absence of lifting work or rigid sitting in youth, and even more with the formless grace of our nervous, sporadic games. This quality was continually breaking through his punctilious manner in the shape of restlessness. He was never quite still. There was always a tapping of foot somewhere or the impatient opening and closing of a hand. He saw me looking with admiration at his car. "It's pretty, isn't it, old sport?" He jumped off to give me a better view. "Haven't you ever seen it before?" I'd seen it. Everybody had seen it. It was a rich cream color, bright with nickel, swollen here and there in its monstrous length with triumphant hat boxes and supper boxes and tool boxes, and terraced with a labyrinth of windshields that mirrored a dozen suns. Sitting down behind many layers of glass in a sort of green leather conservatory, we started to town. I'd talked with him perhaps 6 times in the past month and found to my disappointment that he had little to say. So my first impression that he was a person of some undefined consequence had gradually faded, and he'd become simply the proprietor of an elaborate roadhouse next door. And then came that disconcerting ride. We hadn't reached West Egg Village before Gatsby began leaving his elegant sentences unfinished and slapping himself indecisively on the knee of his caramel-colored suit. "Look here, old sport," he broke out surprisingly. "What's your opinion of me, anyhow?" A little overwhelmed, I began the generalized evasions which that question deserves. "Well, I'm going to tell you something about my life," he interrupted. "I don't want you to get a wrong idea of me from all these stories you hear." So he was aware of the bizarre accusations that flavored conversation in his halls. "I'll tell you God's truth." His right hand suddenly ordered divine retribution to stand by. "I'm the son of some wealthy people in the Middle West, all dead now. I was brought up in America but educated at Oxford because all my ancestors have been educated there for many years. It is a family tradition." He looked at me sideways, and I knew why Jordan Baker had believed he was lying. He hurried the phrase "educated at Oxford" or swallowed it or choked on it as though it had bothered him before. And with this doubt, his whole statement fell to pieces, and I wondered if there wasn't something a little sinister about him after all. "What part of the Middle West?" I inquired casually. "San Francisco." I see. "My family all died, and I came into a good deal of money." His voice was solemn, as if the memory of that sudden extinction of a clan still haunted him. For a moment, I suspected that he was pulling my leg, but a glance at him convinced me otherwise. "After that, I lived like a young Raja in all the capitals of Europe, Paris, Venice, Rome, collecting jewels, chiefly rubies, hunting big game, painting a little, things for myself only, and trying to forget something very sad that had happened to me long ago." With an effort, I managed to restrain my incredulous laughter. The very phrases were worn so threadbare that they evoked no image except that of a turbaned character leaking sawdust at every pore as he pursued a tiger through the Bois de Boulogne. "Then came the war, old sport. It was a great relief, and I tried very hard to die, but I seemed to bear an enchanted life. I accepted a commission as first lieutenant when it began. In the Argonne Forest, I took 2 machine gun detachments so far forward that there was a half-mile gap on either side of us where the infantry couldn't advance. We stayed there 2 days and 2 nights, 130 men with 16 Lewis guns. And when the infantry came up at last, they found the insignia of 3 German divisions among the piles of dead. I was promoted to be a major, and every Allied government gave me a decoration, even Montenegro, little Montenegro down on the Adriatic Sea." Little Montenegro. He lifted up the words and nodded at them with his smile. The smile comprehended Montenegro's troubled history and sympathized with the brave struggles of the Montenegrin people. It appreciated fully the chain of national circumstances which had elicited this tribute from Montenegro's warm little heart. My incredulity was submerged in fascination now. It was like skimming hastily through 12 magazines. He reached in his pocket, and a piece of metal slung on a ribbon fell into my palm. "That's the one from Montenegro." To my astonishment, the thing had an authentic look. "Orderi de Danilo," ran the circular legend. "Montenegro, Nicolas Rex." "Turn it." "Major J. Gatsby," I read. for Bala Extraordinary.